Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And good morning to people on Zoom. So as is our practice, I'd like to begin with just orienting ourselves to the land that we practice on. So I want to have us acknowledge and remember that this land is the traditional, ancestral, and contemporary land of the Dakota and Anishinaabe peoples. So what that means is we are here as uninvited guests, and we have a responsibility to act in a way which supports our Indigenous relatives. We also acknowledge that here at Clouds and Water, we're located in the Rondo neighborhood, which was really decimated with the planned urban planning of Highway 94 going in the path that it went, which went right through the center of that vibrant neighborhood, which is now still here and recovering, but especially Black people in this area have suffered from that. So acknowledging that is also a legacy of this land on which we practice. And then a little bit broader here in the United States, for us practicing Soto Zen Buddhism, we want to acknowledge the suffering of our Chinese and Japanese predecessors in this practice here in the United States, and how many of these spiritual relatives of ours were unable to do their practice and were put into concentration camps during World War II. This acknowledgement isn't like so that then we can feel bad. This acknowledgement is like, just, this is how it is. There is suffering, and then that is part of what we want to do going forward, is acknowledge the suffering and then what we can do about it to heal and prevent harm in the now and in the future. So that's one of the reasons of doing these acknowledgments that we do at least every week, and sometimes more often if there's things that happen during the in between Sunday and the next Sunday. So just acknowledging all of this, and that we're all suffering, and we all wish to be free from suffering, and we can be here together, planted on this land, realizing all of this, and praying for a future in which all beings are honored. So I've been thinking about the times that we live in, which are, for many, many of us, are difficult, especially here in the United States. Well, I don't know if especially, but because we're here, it's difficult for us. It's like, it's difficult a lot of places. A lot of places in some ways have it worse than us, right? With war, environmental degradation, starvation, everything. But just because that there's other people who are maybe suffering more doesn't mean that we have to discount our own suffering. So, like, this is a difficult time that we're in. So I wondered what from our Soto Zen Buddhist teaching and practice, what could be helpful for us, what could be a resource for us so that we can be present to what's happening in a way that's maybe helpful to ourselves and others rather than just kind of collapsing. I attended a meeting with a local clergy this week, and it was about how we can band together to stand up for human rights and take action. And one of the things that one of the speakers said was that as spiritual practitioners, there tends to be a couple different ways of response to this. One response is just like overwhelm and collapse, like, well, there's so much coming at us all at once, there's really nothing I can do about it. So like sort of head in the sand, just like overwhelm, collapse. And then the other way, and this was coming maybe more from, well, coming definitely more from a religious tradition that has deities, to say, well, God will take care, so I don't need to worry. So like both of those are like not doing anything. And I think there's a way in which the God will take care, or in Soto Zen Buddhism we could say, our practice can be a resource and there can be a letting go. That's helpful. That's really helpful. But we don't stop there. But we do need to go there, because if we just go to the action, then we get burnt out, we get overwhelmed, maybe our action isn't as helpful. So anyway, so I just, there's lots of things actually that can be helpful for us. But I picked one thing, because I can only talk about one thing at a time. So this is from what is like currently one of my favorite teachings, and it's The Formless Record of the Transmission of Illumination, also called the Denkaroku. And it was stories from our Buddhist ancestors from India, by Keizan, who was a teacher like a couple after Dogen. Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen Buddhism, but Keizan was also a great teacher, and we honor him. And he was really instrumental in bringing teaching to a wider audience, so we really have a debt of gratitude to him. Anyway, in this book is those stories by Keizan, that ancestor from India, and then a commentary by Gyan Inoue, who is a kind of contemporary. I mean, I think he lived maybe 100 years ago, or was born 100 or more years ago. He's no longer alive, but from Japan. And then this book was his transcriptions of his talks on the Keizan stories, and then translated into English, lucky for us. So I'm going to read the case, the main part of the story, and then mostly I'm going to share some of Gyan Roshi's commentary, and then I'll add my own commentary as well. So this story is about Shanavashin, who I think we pronounce it Shanavasha, but anyway, it's the same. So there's Shakyamuni Buddha, Mahakashapa, Ananda, and then Shanavasha or Shanavashin. Shakyamuni Buddha being the first, you know, the first ancestor in China. So it's like, you know, that he taught many people, but then, you know, we have a way of like the lineage. It didn't just go to one person, but there's sort of the stories of that it going to one person. And so you get that story. So here's the story of really Shanavashin's awakening. So the third ancestor, Venerable Shanavashin, asked Venerable Ananda, so asked his teacher, what kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of dharmas? I'm going to read the whole thing, and then I'll say something about what they're talking about. So the third ancestor, Venerable Shanavashin, asked Venerable Ananda, what kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of dharmas? Ananda pointed to the corner of Shanavashin's kasaya, so that's the okesa, that's the robe. So this priest robe. Shanavashin again asked, what kind of thing is the original nature of the Bodhi of Buddhas? And then Ananda took a corner of Shanavashan's kasaya, or okesa, and pulled it. And at that moment, Shanavashan greatly awakened. So, first of all, what does this mean? What does this question mean? What kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of dharmas? So he's really asking, I think, what is there before all of this stuff comes into my mind, before all the chaos of the world around me? You know, what is the fundamental nature? What's like underneath it all? Is it just all this, all this stuff happening? You know, whether it's in my own mind or, you know, I look around in the world. So what is it to just be solid? You know, what's the fundamental non-arising nature of dharmas? Dharmas means teaching, but it also means like just reality or things in the world. What is that? And then Ananda points to the corner of the robe. So that's, there's a lot of stories like that in Zen. You know, what is it? You know, it's like the cypress tree, or what is it? It's, 7 pounds of hemp. You know, I mean, there's all these answers, and they seem kind of frustrating and nonsensical, but it's sort of like, it's just right here. It's just right here. And there's also a story about, kind of a backstory about Shanavashan, which was that he was supposedly born fully clothed. And it had to do with, him like making offerings in past lives to Buddhas of robes. So then he was born fully clothed, and then when he, became a practitioner, those clothes like magically changed into Buddha's robes. And it said in the summer it was a cool robe, and in the winter it was a warm robe. So like he just always had it. Clothes were there. So to me, like that, and of course this is just I don't take that literally, but it's a fun story, and it also kind of tells us like why Ananda would point to the robe, because it's something that Shanavashan always had. Like it's just so near to him, especially. So it's right here. So that's what Ananda is pointing, right here. But then still, Shanavashan was wondering, well, I still kind of don't get it. So then he asks this follow-up question, which is kind of the same question. What kind of thing is the original nature of the Bodhi of Buddha? So Bodhi means awakening. So like the awakening nature of Buddha is like, well, what is it? I still don't know what it is. And so then Ananda pulls a corner of the robe. And so he kind of like, he changes it, right? The robe changes position. So then it's not fixed anymore. And then at that moment, he awakened. So that's my commentary, based on what I've read from Gyan Roshi and also my understanding. But let's see a little bit more about what Gyan Roshi has to say. And can you remind me, Rin, how long do I have? What's my stop time?
I believe you have until 10:17.
That long?
10:13. I couldn't find the notes.
Okay, so yeah, because we've changed it, and we have the Donables thing and youth practice. So
youth practice is today.
So I think it's 10 after.
Let's do 10.
If I go a little late, it's probably okay.
You'll still be sooner than what I suggest.
Okay, so here's what Gyan Roshi says about this case. The third ancestor, Venerable Shanavashan, asked Venerable Ananda, so it's just repeating, what kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of dharmas? Ananda pointed to the corner of Shanavashan's kasaya. So Gyan Roshi, from the beginning, every part of us is composed in such a way that we are never in delusion, even if it may appear so. Buddhism is the only teaching that truly informs us of this. If you strive to become a splendid person in the future, such artifice will disturb this. Rather, if you completely let go of trying to manipulate the mind and remain single-minded like a child, then you will quickly be able to see through this. Why is this so? Because it is only our views and opinions that have broken what was finally made from the beginning. The source is this way, and if you stop objectifying and distorting yourself with thoughts, then you will inevitably become single-minded. So I'll just add here, I don't think he's saying that you should stop thinking, because we can't actually do that. It's impossible. We have a brain, and it secretes thoughts, and it's just going on and on like that. I mean, once in a while, thoughts might stop, but if they don't come back, then you're dead. So basically, we don't want to, you know, sort of denigrate thoughts. But what he's inviting us to do is stop objectifying and distorting ourselves with thoughts. So stop allowing the thoughts to define who we are. Okay, let me just continue. So he continues, and here it says, what kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of Dharma? Gyan Roshi says, it is a fact, and he claps when he says that, it is a fact. I've never seen him, but actually the person who wrote in like the how he talked, I can just, you know, imagine. That is a fact. That this thing, and he points to his body, this thing is complete as it is now and has been from birth. And he's not just talking about his body, it's like all of our bodies. This thing is complete as it is now and has been from birth. So there is no question of what is to be done or how it is to be done from now on. And then in the case, Ananda pointed to the corner of Shanavashan's kasaya. Let me explain the difference between pointing at the kasaya, the robe, and seeing it. All right, now there's more like action. If I do this, he raised his hand, if I do this, it is just like this for whoever sees it. If there is a difference between those who are confused by this and those who instantly have great enlightenment just with this. If it doesn't agree with your view, if you don't understand this, then the question, what does it mean, arises. So, it's his hand. What does it mean? This is the nature of confusion, and it arises now in the same way as I do this. This clearly exists right now before you think or do anything. So this, it clearly exists right now. The raising of the hand or whatever, this gesture that we're using as an example. This clearly exists right now before you think or do anything about it. If I say, this is Gyan Roshi, if I say, this is your fundamentally non-arising nature, you would think, what? If I say, this is your fundamentally non-arising nature, you would think, what? When that happens, you are leaving out the fact, the reality as it is now, and thinking with this. So, allowing ourselves to just be present before the thought arises, or when the thought arises, then not clinging to that, not getting tangled up into the what is it. We can still ask a question, what is it? It's okay. Being curious is okay. But sometimes we get tangled in that curiosity and thinking, we have to know. Gyan Roshi says, it is always like this for human beings. While throwing away the reality of the fact, what is happening, so in the gesture in that example, while throwing away the reality of the fact, you try to grasp and manipulate the fact by means of thoughts, but this only leads to confusion. Since this is how it is, how people normally are, Shanavashan's two questions are put forth here to help you reflect on this. Every one of our movements, just as it is, from the tips of our fingers to the tips of our toes, is already our fundamentally non-arising nature. It is this nature that is eternal and never dies. It is this nature that cannot be confused or diluted. Shanavashan thoroughly realized it is clearly this way because he was able to throw himself away with this one glance at the corner of the kasaya. So, a lot of times people hear things like this and think, okay, but that's not me, I don't really get this, and become despairing. And I think there's a dynamic for me between the investigating, you know, which we can do with our minds or with our bodies, and practicing, like, what is it, asking the question, and then also trusting or having faith and listening to what our spiritual ancestors have said. And so Gyan Roshi says it like this: you yourselves are just like the ancestral masters in that all conditions to be liberated are met. So in other words, we have the possibility of awakening right here. We have all the ingredients. We're not deficient. Okay, I'm going to come back to this, the question of Shanavashan. What kind of thing is the fundamentally non-arising nature of dharmas? And then there's the commentary by Kazan, and he follows it up with, who could lack the fundamentally non-arising nature of all dharmas? Gyan asks, is there anyone who doesn't have the fundamentally non-arising nature of all dharmas? Is there anyone who isn't endowed with Buddha nature? In other words, Buddha nature is our nature as something impermanent and not fixed. It is our free nature, and a person who realizes this is called a Buddha. That is Buddha nature. So it's like rhetorical questions here. Is there anyone who doesn't have the fundamentally non-arising nature of all dharmas? No, there is not. Then Gyan Roshi says, this is the same for the corner of a kasaya. Does a kasaya stay still and unchanging as it is? It is surely different when it is pulled on the corner and when it is not. Every one of your activities, done with the whole body, comes about immediately and inevitably before you think about it, by encountering conditions. What will you do when there is a change? Will you throw away what came before? Will you prepare yourself to accept the next thing? No. Before you are aware of anything, the previous thing immediately disappears and the new thing suddenly comes in without you knowing it. So I think a lot of us can experience this, and it's actually a phenomena, I forget the name of it, but it's like, you have something that you're going to get from another room, right? You're like, okay, I need such and such. And then you walk through the door into the other room, and then immediately you forget what you came in there for. And there's a reason, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, why that happens. It's because we need to, like, what was before is not important. What's really important is what's here right now. And if we just are like so focused on the past that we can't see what's here right now, we could be in trouble. There could be danger that we need to be aware of. So that's why that happens. So I think that kind of points to, like, this is, like, on a really basic level, we can manifest this, like, just being present. And it can be frustrating when then you have to go back to the other room to remember, because you're back there, and then, oh yeah, now I remember. You could say it to yourself over and over. So sometimes in little situations like that, it's okay to try to remember from the past. But here we're talking about more in a big picture, a change in a big picture. And this change in a big picture, and that why this would happen, he says, no, before you are aware of anything, the previous thing immediately disappears and the new thing suddenly comes in without your knowing it. Why is there this sort of activity? There simply is this wonderful change happening that is beyond your understanding. What is this anyway? It is the great universe. The totality of this, and again he points to his body, and we can imagine that our own bodies, the totality of this is equal to the great cosmos. This body-mind exists in this way, equal to the great cosmos. Everything, everywhere is this thing itself, this body-mind itself. There is no other place for us to go. There is no other place from which we came. It is to that degree that this body-mind is an active body, is an activity body, perfectly put together. When you know that, you are no longer concerned about your birth or death. It is simply that the time has come. But since you don't know this, you worry about it. I have been living until now. What is going to happen when I die? Where will I go when I die? Or we might say, what will happen to me? What will happen to us in this totalitarian regime that we seem to be moving into? What will happen to us? What will happen to this country? I'm not saying we don't do anything about it, but if we get tangled up in concerns about it, then we can, like, devolve into not, to sort of not being frozen and not being able to act. So the acting can come from those concerns, what will happen to me, being blown away. And that will be blown away when you realize that this, there's a wonderful change happening beyond your understanding, that this body and mind is equal to the great cosmos. When that, then all such concerns will be blown away. And if so, if you really do this for yourself, then you will understand. It is for this reason that Ananda pulled the corner of Shanavashan Kasaya, or robe. So I just will pause for a moment to say, so you might be thinking, well, this is all great, but how can I actually realize this for myself? And I just want to say, zazen, meditation. And actually, not even meditation, I'll say zazen, because the way Dogen defines zazen is not just sitting meditation, but it's present moment awareness throughout the day, throughout your activities. So some of us sit every day, do sitting meditation every day, or do it a lot. That's pretty good. But others of us could be biking or swimming or doing the dishes or walking. So can you bring this, like, and it's this awareness, like this hand going up, just awareness of what's happening, and practicing that over and over is how we can realize this. For a lot of us, sitting still is helpful, but not for everyone. So whatever it is for you that's going to help anchor you, learning about the teachings and then being with the teachings in your life. Okay, let's see. So Gyan Roshi says, we are already perfectly in order, so that in reality there is nothing leaving or entering. The way of Buddha is the teaching that helps you become aware of this. That is to say, enlightenment is not a matter of grasping something special. Rather, it is to realize that there is no one to grasp such an extraordinary thing. Really, this can happen, but you won't be able to taste this unless you truly throw away your present self. I wouldn't use that language exactly, but throw away clinging to your present self, I would say. There is a time when the body and mind is truly cast off. At that point, you are finally able to verify, beyond all doubt, that the temporal condition of letting go is your true self. So I love that line, the temporal condition of letting go is your true self. So it's not fixed. And this is where what I think can really help us in troubled times, knowing that there isn't something fixed. And sometimes when we see that from our clinging to ourself, that there isn't something fixed feels scary. Like, that's not helping me. I want things to stay the same. I want to know that there is something that's the same. Well, there is something, but that something is that everything is changing wondrously. That's what's underlying, is just this all being present all together and everything interrelated. And I know I'm almost out of time, but I really wanted to share something of wisdom from our indigenous relatives that's really related to this. I'm reading Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. A lot of you might be familiar with this. So I'll just say real briefly, she's, in this part that I read recently, she's trying to learn her native language, Potawatomi. She's from that that tribe, that nation, Potawatomi. And she's having a lot of difficulties, and one of the reasons is because she's a native English speaker. That language was taken from her ancestors, and she didn't learn it. So now she's trying to learn it as a native English speaker. And in English, it's a noun-based language. 70% of the English words are nouns. And only 30% are verbs. Well, there's more parts of speech than nouns and verbs, but, you know, just to say, if we're just looking at nouns and verbs, 70% nouns, 30% verbs. But in Potawatomi, 70% are verbs. So she's having a lot of difficulty with the language, and also a lot of European language divide into masculine and feminine nouns, but Potawatomi divides into animate and inanimate. Mm. So anyway, so here's the quick story of what she's doing. She's trying to learn this. This page is blurred, and my eyes settled on a word, a verb, of course, to be a Saturday. Poof! She threw her book down. Since when is Saturday a verb? Everyone knows it's a noun. I grabbed the dictionary and flipped more pages, and all kinds of things seem to be verbs. To be a hill, to be red, to be a long sandy stretch of beach. And then my finger rested on wi kwa gama, to be a bay. Ridiculous, he says, I ranted in my head. There's no reason to make it so complicated. No wonder no one speaks it. And she says, I was ready to give up. I'd learned a few words, done my duty to the language that was taken from my grandfather. Oh, the ghosts of the missionaries in the boarding schools must have been rubbing their hands in glee at my frustration. She's going to surrender, they said. And then, I swear, I heard the zap of synapses firing. An electric current sizzled down my arm and through my finger and practically scorched the page where that one word lay. In that moment, I could smell the water of the bay, watch it rock against the shore, and hear it sift onto the sand. A bay is a noun only if water is dead. When bay is a noun, it is defined by humans, trapped between its shores and contained by the word. But the verb, wequegama, to be a bay, releases the water from bondage and lets it live. To be a bay holds the wonder that, for this moment, the living water has decided to shelter itself between these shores, conversing with cedar roots and a flock of baby ducks, because it could do otherwise. It could become a stream or an ocean or a waterfall. And there are verbs for that too. To be a hill, to be a sandy beach, to be a Saturday are all possible verbs in a world where everything is alive. And so I thought, for us, this is really helpful, because let's think of ourselves as a verb. What is that? That is, we're not fixed. We're all, and I know, I think Katagiri talked about, I remember hearing like that he, in one of his lectures he said, I'm Katagiri-ing, or, you know, I'm, you know, Myo-on-ing, or I'm Rin-ing, you know, like, I'm Yokai-ing. That you could say that of yourself, like, I'm just becoming this constellation of thoughts and feelings and, you know, how my body's manifesting. I'm just doing in this moment. But it's not really who I am. I'm not limited to that.
And just for you to know, it actually came from Dogen.
From Dogen? Oh, not great.
Well, he just really repeated it.
All right. That's great. All right. I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. So if you have questions, you can find me afterwards. Thank you.